Welcome to this 538 Emergency Politics Podcast, House Speaker Paul Ryan is retiring edition. I'm Galen Taruk. Jody is out today. And actually, so is everyone else. So it's a busy day. So this is just going to be a monologue about Paul Ryan's 20-year House career. So sit back, relax. The year was 1998. And 28-year-old Ryan had just been elected from Wisconsin's 1st District, becoming the second youngest member of the House. Okay, I'm joking. Don't tune out just yet. Actually, here with me to discuss the news today are senior writer Perry Bacon Jr., joining from D.C. Hey, Perry.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And 538 contributor and Marquette political science professor Julia Azari, joining from Wisconsin. Hey, Julia.
Hello.
How's the mood in Wisconsin?
Hard to say. I've mostly been alone in my car and at a committee meeting, but I expect that the mood in Wisconsin among the population that I spend a lot of time with, college students, is going to be very inquisitive about what this means for Randy Brice in the Wisconsin 1st District, who's kind of the favorite to be the Democratic nominee there. He's reasonably popular among college students. So that's a very unrepresentative perspective, but I think that there's a lot of interest right now in the state around the partisan dynamics of the last couple of years. So, yeah, should be pretty interesting.
We can get into the politics in Paul Ryan's district a little bit later. But to start off, why did Paul Ryan retire? He said this morning in his speech that he accomplished much of what he wanted. He never wanted the job to begin with. And now he wants to focus on spending time with his family. So is there more to it than that?
I think, you know, I covered him a lot, you know, in 2009, when he was kind of one of the leading Republicans in terms of figuring out what their strategy for opposing Obama was. And I know at that point, he actually did say and talk a lot about how I want to be the guy writing the bills, not sort of figuring out the voting coalitions. Like, he's not been trying to become speaker his whole life, the way I would say both Boehner and Nancy Pelosi, I think, did want to be speaker for a long time, in contrast. So I think that part is true. But did he accomplish all he wanted to? No. I mean, Ryan, from the time I've known him, the time he's been in politics, has been talking about big time reforms to Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, along with taxes. He got one of those four done. And my sense is realized that with Donald Trump, who's not particularly conservative on issues like that, he was unlikely to get the other three done. So I think on that level, Ryan was sort of gave up on the policy. And on the politics, Ryan's much more of a kind of establishment, Jeb Bush, Marco Rubio kind of person. I don't think he fit into this kind of Donald Trump Washington that well. So I'm not surprised. Like, you know, he and Trump were not close, never really clicked. So I think that's part of it, too. The other factor, of course, the Republicans are, you know, there's a good chance the Republicans are going to lose the House in the upcoming elections anyway. So Paul Ryan may have been leaving a job he was kind of going to be forced out of anyway.
Julia, what's your take on his relationship with President Trump and his relationship with the Republican caucus?
So my take on this is that many of the problems that led to Ryan being speaker in the first place are the same problems now. When Boehner stepped down as House Speaker in October of 2015, I wrote a piece about how everyone wanted to be president and no one wanted to be speaker. And I think that that's still sort of a question, is like, the contemporary Republican Party is a pretty presidential party. You know, it has a kind of executive focus. It's foreign policy is a really critical element of it, and that tends to be focused in the executive branch. Contemporary Republicans have not really built themselves up as a congressional party. They're great at opposition. They're great at being a congressional party when Obama's in office or when Clinton's in office.
Let me emphasize what Julia, she didn't use these words, but we've both hinted around the phrase House Freedom Caucus. Like, the sort of most powerful people in the House, I would argue, is this Freedom Caucus, these group of members who is very conservative. But it's not ever clear to me what they actually want, what they're actually for. They're against every spending bill. They're against everything. They didn't like Boehner and tried to push him out. They don't really like Ryan now. So I think Julia is capturing the broad of that. And the specifics day to day for Paul Ryan as speaker is you have a bunch of members who complain about everything you do, who you can't get behind or organized behind anything. It's the same thing Boehner faced too. I mean, having two speakers resign in 3 years is, I think, historically unusual. But if you look at how this job goes, it's, you know, hard to organize these guys for a lunch.
The Republican Party has also changed significantly since 1998. I think we can all agree. And as you talked about, Perry, Paul Ryan his focus has been reform of Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, tax policy, you know, loves free trade, a lot of aspects that are not strongly associated with President Trump. Does the Republican Party that Paul Ryan represents really exist anymore? And what does his experience say about the direction of the party?
If you remember back a little more than 2 years ago, it was clear that Trump was going to be the nominee. I think John Kasich and Ted Cruz had dropped out. And Trump went to Capitol Hill for this big visit. And it was part of it was that Paul Ryan still wouldn't endorse him. I'm not sure who Paul Ryan thought he was going to endorse instead, but he wouldn't endorse Trump. And I think it goes to this notion that Paul Ryan wants to be part of this kind of, you know, fiscally, he wants to change fiscal policy. But he was behind in supporting the kind of 2013 immigration idea when the Republican Party was for legalization of undocumented people and so on. So on the social issues where Trump has been very strong on the like, immigration, Paul Ryan was never there. And I think, you know, in the Republican Party of 1998, Paul Ryan was a part of. Even 2008, Paul Ryan fit pretty well into. Even 2016. But now I don't think Paul Ryan does in the same way that Jeb Bush or Jeff Flake or all these other figures don't really fit into the party because it's become Trump's party. I mean, it really has in that direction. In fact, if you look at the people who might become speaker next, the number two Republican, Kevin McCarthy, is probably the leading candidate to become speaker next. And I think his biggest credential is that Trump really likes him. Like, they're buddy-buddy and they're pals. Trump was talking about having McCarthy to be chief of staff. And it's not because of any kind of policy alignment. It's more just because Trump plainly likes McCarthy and Trump does not really like Paul Ryan. And the Republican Party right now is really about, in some ways, does Donald Trump like you, policy aside.
All correct, and the Trumpification of the Republican Party is something I'm going to be thinking a lot about and hopefully writing in the next couple of days. But I want to also say another name that I feel like is lurking here, and that's Reagan. Paul Ryan is when we think about him as someone who's I don't know what the right word would be, but different from Trump on the immigration issue and more, you know, pro-business, cut government. He's really picking up on a Reagan kind of tradition.
So, you know, there's this split between Ryan and Trump that was borne out through the election. But post-election, he more or less got along with Trump, at least for the cameras, and was able to pass legislation that he wanted to. So why not stick around and further that agenda that he's been so enthusiastic about since he took office, right? Like, if he wants to make a case for his version of the Republican Party, isn't leaving office the opposite of what he should be doing?
I don't think so. Maybe Julie disagrees. I think it's pretty clear that if your goal is to do Social Security and Medicare changes, they're going to be defined as cuts and probably are cuts in a certain way. I don't think Donald Trump is disciplined enough or committed enough to do that. I mean, I just don't think that Trump in some ways ran. I mean, his campaign promises, you know, have disappeared in some ways. But Trump ran against these kinds of cuts during the campaign. He was the Republican who said, we're going to spend more money on these kind of programs. So I just don't see Trump's coalition is full of older people. I just don't see a world in which the sort of the really tough stuff Ryan wants to do was ever going to get done with Trump, because they couldn't do Obamacare. They barely got tax reform over the line. So, and I also, it's important to say, I would argue that, you know, Trump is unpopular now. I would argue the Paul Ryan policy vision, if it was the center of a campaign, is much more unpopular. The reason, I think one thing Trump did well in 2016 was to not take up the most controversial, most small government parts of the existing GOP orthodoxy. I actually think Paul Ryanism was never going to be policy, and now I think he's come to realize that too.
On the policy front, I think that's right at the national level. It's interesting to see how this sort of plays out, where some states are moving more in that direction on the state level. But the thing that I think is really important here is not just Trump's policy direction, but Trump as Trump, right? The immediate context of this is the Cohen FBI raid, right? And whatever may be going on with Trump today and the rumors this morning that what I thought was going to take up my day about whether Trump was going to shake things up in the Justice Department as a way to force Mueller out. You know, if I were in Ryan's position, it might make sense to get away from the politics of the House as all of this heats up, particularly thinking about being in the minority and what that might mean in terms of like staffing a judiciary committee that's going to vote on potentially on articles of impeachment, I think that that would be a very live agenda item if the Democrats retake the House.
And presumably you're saying that for Paul Ryan's political future, he would want to be far away from that, meaning that he envisions himself having a political future.
I guess that's a default assumption. I haven't had enough time to think about this because I think this is a question is, you know, is he thinking he's going to have a political future in some other context, a Senate run, a governor run? Scott Walker is not term limited here in Wisconsin, so there's not like an obvious moment when it would be Paul Ryan's turn, but presumably someone else will be governor here at some point. You know, so that's our Senate races have been quite competitive, so those are all possibilities. He did one vice presidential ticket. Maybe he's looking to do another. I have no idea. Or maybe, as Perry noted in his piece, there's lots of non-legislative options, non-political options in D.C. that would be attractive to him. I don't know.
Once Julia brought that up, I did think, yes, I mean, Paul Ryan, he likes to do policy. I can imagine him being governor of a state or even a senator in a different situation. I just think that this situation, I think Julia's right. This dynamic is in now where Paul Ryan goes to press conferences and every question is, Trump tweeted X, what do you think? Trump may want to fire Rosenstein, what do you think about that? I don't think that's where Paul Ryan wants to be. When I watch him, he looks kind of uncomfortable. I mean, everybody would be, but he's kind of on the Trump defense team right now, and that's not a role I think he wants to be in.
So can I add one more thing, which is if I were a kind of nationally prominent legislative Republican, one thing I would want to do would be to hide out until I knew what this whole thing was. Like I said, there's the Reagan Republican Party is this kind of ongoing tension between establishment and movement, and that's taken a number of interesting twists and turns, including Trump. And I would kind of want to know, like, how will the power bases shake out in this party, and how will the relationship between the party's voters and its elites shake out? Like, I would just kind of want to know what the next twist or turn is in this story and maybe not be a live, you know, front row witness to it.
And then plot your next move from that.
Right. You could imagine, now that Julia's got me thinking about this, you could imagine, I don't know who runs the Heritage Foundation now or the American Enterprises do. You could imagine Paul Ryan becomes head of like a conservative think tank for a while and then tries to figure out where the party is going. And then if a more regular Republican is president, he could become a big cabinet person. He could run for the Senate. I think that Julia is right to some extent. He needs to hide out for a while as he figures out where the party is going. I don't think he wants to be in a place where the role of the party is to roll back, you know, immigration and to defend Trump.
So that's what Ryan was looking at from a policy and governing perspective in making his decision. But let's talk about, of course, the midterms. First of all, does his stepping down affect what we already think about the 2018 midterms?
I view it as an indication of what Paul Ryan already knows. You know, Paul Ryan raises a lot of money for Republicans, but I think that's Republican donors giving money to whoever the leader of the Republican Party is. I don't think Ryan's decision is going to hurt the party in the midterms that much. I think it is another signal of, along with all these other retirements, along with special elections, another signal that Republicans are very nervous about the midterms and don't think they're going to go particularly well. And I just think it's as simple as that.
Was he personally concerned about winning re-election?
Julia, what do you think? I don't really think so, but I'd be curious what Julia thinks.
I don't think so. I mean, the story around Wisconsin's first district, I've been kind of looking at it this morning. It has been for the last, as long as I can remember since I've been living here, it's kind of been like, oh, it's going to be close, and then, like, it's not that close. But I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but the presumptive nominee for the Democratic Party in the first district had this like viral video. He's a retired iron worker. Bernie Sanders was here a couple months ago to rally with him. He's got a lot of attention. Like, I can kind of tell you on the ground, and like I said, in the college student population, the people that are doing a lot of the work, he's really captured imaginations that way and kind of captured people's sense of where the party could be going and the Democratic Party. And so, you know, that's interesting. That doesn't always happen in that district. Whether that really means, I mean, it's a very white district. Ryan has represented it, as you pointed out in the beginning, Galen, for a long time. You know, whether that really means anything, it's hard to say. I don't know that he was personally, I don't know that I would say he was scared, but I would say that there was probably a non-trivial chance that that seat was in play.
Yeah, looking at the Cook rating, it was R+5. So not in that, like, competitive bracket, right, but just at the cusp. And I know, so I worked in Wisconsin covering state politics for a little bit. I think the interesting thing about that district is that that area of Wisconsin is not like the wealthy Milwaukee suburbs of Washington, Ozaukee, Waukesha. It is more kind of working class. Obviously, there are more wealthy areas. Paul Ryan lives in a more wealthy area of that district. You know, Trump actually did better in that district than Romney did, right? It's the kind of district that fits this more, perhaps more populist movement on both sides of the aisle.
Yeah, I think that's right. It's an interesting area there. And there's this documentary called As Goes Janesville that's about the closing of a plant there and what happens to people there. And it's, you know, it kind of captures the political moment. It's a couple of years old, but it does give you this sense of what's going on in these districts where there's not the kind of booming economic activity that you see on the coast. It's a little bit removed from Milwaukee, which is an economic center. Yeah, it's an interesting kind of place, and I think that the kind of narrative battle that could come out of that could be pretty interesting, I think, for national politics.
So looking back to the midterms at large, Dennis Ross, another House Republican, he's from Florida. He also announced his retirement today, and that brings the total number of House Republicans who have either already retired or plan to 43, and that's according to CNN. I mean, and looking at the charts, it is unprecedented. Does that start a trend in, like, freakouts that will cause more people to retire and create almost this self-fulfilling prophecy where it's harder to win seats when you don't have incumbents protecting them, and therefore it's even harder for Republicans to hold their House majority?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's definitely true. I think that, like, Ryan is joining a trend, and I do suspect maybe I can't say accelerated because it's already really accelerated at this point. It's already happened to some extent. I mean, I think it's more like the Charlie Dents of Pennsylvania were the problem. But now we're in a zone where, yes, there's still some filing deadlines, I think, coming up for Congress. I assume most races have candidates already. But if you're thinking about running for the House or the Senate, you're Republican and you haven't already got in, Paul Ryan deciding to leave is probably, even if he left mostly for reasons because of his own things that have nothing to do with winning re-election, even the slightest thought that Paul Ryan left because he thought he might lose, he's the Speaker of the House, he might lose, I think is discouraging if you're thinking about running. And will it cause a couple more retirements? I don't know, but I think it's possible. We should just make one more point, Galen, before we close here, to come back to the governing part a little bit. I do wonder if Paul Ryan now is in a position where he can handle, he has defended Trump on pretty much everything involving the sort of ethics, corruption, Russia. He stood behind Devin Nunes. I think one question might be, can Paul Ryan's behavior, he still runs the, you know, the most, one of the most important parts of the government. Can his behavior be even 5% less pro-Trump? Because that would make a difference, I think.
So you mean, in the meantime, he announced his retirement today, he will stop being Speaker of the House in January of 2019. From here on out, what does his relationship look like with Trump? What kind of legislation is he pushing for? That's kind of your question, right?
I don't think it's legislation at all. I think it's much more about, the House has been really, I mean, the phrase I use all the time is, the House up to now has been very focused on investigating the investigation. You know, Nunes, Mark Meadows, a lot of committee chairs are very focused on probing Mueller, Rosenstein, questioning DOJ very aggressively, really, you know, trying to suggest there's two scandals here. One is the Russia scandal, and one is how DOJ handled the Russia scandal, handled the Clinton email, etc. Paul Ryan has stood very much with the Republicans and the sort of Fox News crowd that has been very skeptical, you know, sort of running a parallel investigation. I wonder if he feels as much pressure to do that if he's leaving in January. In other words, you know, I hate to be sort of partisan about it, and I'm trying to avoid that, but there's these questions around the rule of law and if Trump is, like, undermining that or not. And I think, partisanship aside, you know, you can see that different Republicans, like, you can look at Trey Gowdy or Flake or Corker, a lot of the retiring Republicans are saying, I'm not comfortable with how Trump is, you know, viewing the rule of law. And I wonder if Paul Ryan gets any closer to that kind of rhetoric now that he's leaving.
I have a hard hard time predicting that Trump, or excuse me, that Paul Ryan will take a more Jeff Flake route, but maybe he will. But I think overall, what this tells us is that we should expect members of the Republican caucus to behave in ways that they perceive to be risk averse and safe, however they conceptualize that, as things become more and more uncertain. And that's, I think, really what's going on within the parties. It's not clear whose party it is. It's not clear how they're going to whether this, I like this idea of sort of investigation of the investigation, whether that is going to continue to be the kind of main political story, what will happen with the president, what will happen in the midterm. I think all of that stuff, all that uncertainty is going to lead various members of the Republican House caucus to make the decisions that they think can kind of be most risk averse in that context.
Perry, that runs perhaps a little bit against what you, maybe not predicting, but suggesting could happen. I mean, do you think that Paul Ryan takes a step towards protecting Robert Mueller or something like that? Or do you think it's more just rhetoric?
I mean, I generally agree with Julia that members respond to incentives and so on. I do think these members who are leaving Congress have different incentives than the ones who are staying. So that's kind of what I'm getting at. And I think that, is there going to be a Mueller bill on the House floor? I doubt it, in part because the majority of Republicans, I don't think, are going to support that. And I think McCarthy and Scalise and people like that would not want that to go to the floor, regardless of Paul Ryan himself. But yeah, I do think, I don't know, I'm not sure I'm laying it as like what I think Paul Ryan will do. I just think rhetorically and procedurally, we're in uncharted territory in terms of what Trump might do. Yeah, I don't, is if Trump fires Rosenstein tomorrow, will Paul Ryan start impeachment hearings? I would suggest the answer to that yesterday was no. The answer to that tomorrow will be no. The answer to that in September will probably be no. But I do think the Speaker of the House's words and behind the scenes actions can matter. And I can't predict what they are, but I do think that Paul Ryan's incentive structure is now different in the sense that, you know, look, the profiles are going to come out of, you know, Paul Ryan has an ego like the rest of us do. And I do, you know, I think he's going to read the stories about he's been an enabler of Trump. And I think he wants to think of himself as Mr. Policy Guy in his mind. And we can disagree about whether he is or not. But I think he wants his reputation to be policy innovator. And right now it's policy innovator and consistent ally of Trump. And I think he would like the second part to go away if possible.
All right. Well, Paul Ryan has about 8 months left as Speaker to work on that legacy. And we'll see where those 8 months take us. But let's leave it there for now. Thank you, Julia.
Thank you.
And thanks, Perry.
All right. Thanks, Caleb.
That's a wrap. I guess this is our second emergency podcast of the week, but there are 2 days left in the week. So we'll see what those 2 days bring. My name is Galen Druk. See you soon.